All right, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Gimel Aleph by the two dots. Chasidim o Anshei Maaseh. Tan Rabbanan. Yesh mehen umrim. There are those that say, as part of the celebration of the Simchat Bet HaShueva, Ashrei Yaldutenu, Shlo Bisha et Ziknutenu. How good is our childhood, so that it doesn't embarrass us in our elder years. Elu Chasidim v'Anshei Maaseh. As Rashi says, Chasidim means, Hu Chasid, Havi chasid mi ikaro. Chasid means someone who has always been that way. Someone who has maintained a certain way of life throughout. So these are people who were always good and always doing the right thing. And so they say, Ashrei yalduteinu shlo bisha ziknuteinu. V'yesh men omrim, Ashrei ziknuteinu shekipra et yalduteinu. And there are others who say, how wonderful is our older years because they provide kapara for our younger years. Elu balei tshuva. These are the people who have done tshuva. Elu ve'elu omrim. They both say together, Ashrei mi shelo chata. Halachi is the person who has not sinned. Umi shechata yeshuv v'imcholo. And one who has sinned will be forgiven if they do tshuva. So it was, I think, encouragement to the crowd that there were different individuals here. It was not a uniform number of individuals, and this is encouraging that everybody has the chance or the opportunity to become a individual of stature and to grow in spiritual heights or to join the spiritual elite, that even if one had sinned when they're younger, there is the opportunity to do tshuva. If one had not sinned when they're younger, even luckier are they that they can continue that path when they get older. Tanyu, Amru alav al hilel hazaken, kishaya sameach b'simchat beit ha-shoeva. When he was celebrating, rejoicing in the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, Mark Cain, this is what he said. Imani kan, hakol kan. If I'm here, everything's here. Imani kan, and if I'm not here, mikan, there's no one here. So Rashi explains it. If you look at Rashi, it says, Doresh ayad rabim. He used to make this drasha to the rabim, shelo yechtu b'shmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wanted to make sure that they weren't using Hashem's name inappropriately, so he uses the ani instead of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. So he says, as if, Hozman Shani Chafetz Bebayit Hazeh, as long as I want this house, meaning Hashem wants this Mikdash to stand, Ushkinati Shriya Bo, and my Shkina is present in it, Yehei Vodo Kayam, then its glory will remain, V'yavo HaKol Kan, and everybody will be here. V'im Techetau, if you guys sin, V'aselek Shkinati, and I take away my Shkina, M'yavo Kan, who's going to come here? It's going to be nothing. So Hillel's pronouncement is not about himself, but about the presence of the Shekhinah, the presence of Hashem, which is the pasuk that Shlomo HaMelech says that a bayit that a Kodesh Baruch was not a part of, shav amolu banav, that it was for nothing that they have worked to build. I mean, that a building's not a building unless Hashem is there and Hashem approves of it. You can, there's stones, there is a edifice, but that doesn't mean that it means anything until the presence of Hashem is there. And it's what he's saying. If I'm here, Hashem says, then everything can go on. Everything is fine. If I'm not here, then nothing matters over here. That's the way Rashi explains Hillel HaZaken. Tosafot says over here, the Rashi brings Rashi's interpretation. He says, "Aval Yerushalmi mashmo sheyomer al atzmo." Says, but in Yerushalmi, it doesn't sound like way. It doesn't sound like he's using this as a euphemism for a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but rather he's speaking about himself. Deparich u'dekilu sohu tzarich. Because the Yerushalmi asks the very obvious question, what, does he need to praise himself? So the fact that the Yerushalmi asked that question implies that he's speaking about himself. Klomar, v'chei yetzarich l'shabcho v'aktiv elef alafim yishum shumeni mushani dekenegid Yisrael hayomer. So then the Yerushalmi answers that it was also a euphemism, but not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather for Klal Yisrael. The unique standing, the unique status of Klal Yisrael, that chaviv alav kibusan shel Yisrael menakol. Hashem adores or loves the praise of Klal Yisrael. So Hillel's not speaking about himself because he's just one individual. One individual, no matter how great they are, they're still only tiny in the eyes of Hashem. To say that if I'm here, everything's here, right? That would not be necessarily appropriate or beneficial. So Tosafot quotes Yerushalmi saying that it's not talking about Hillel, but talking about Klal Yisrael as a whole. And Hillel is praising Klal Yisrael. They're saying that if Klal Yisrael's here, then everything is good. If Klal Yisrael's not here, then nothing is going on. Huayo Omer Cain, he continued, he had also had this saying, the makom sheni ohev sham raglai malichot oti. To the place that I love to go, there my legs take me. So that's definitely a personal expression, whether it's about Hillel himself or about Klal Yisrael. But the place that I love to go, then my legs take me, as if my legs can go on their own. So you don't have to do anything. They just automatically know where to go, the proper place to go. אם אתה תבוא אל ביתי, אני אבוא אל ביתך, ואם אתה לא תבוא אל ביתי, אני לא אבוא אל ביתך. So here it seems clearly to be speaking about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which is, if you come to my house, I will come to your house. ואם אתה לא תבוא אל ביתי, if you don't come to my house, then I won't come to your house, שנאמר, כל מקום אשר אזכיר את שמי, אבוא אליך ובירכתיך. Every place that you mention my name, I will come to you and bless you. That's used both by the Gemara to explain the location where we use the Shema Miforash. In the Migdash, the place that we come, that's where the Shema Miforash is used. It's also used in the Mishnah Navot to describe that even an individual who is learning, that Hashem is present, Hashem comes there. So at B'chol Mekom Asher Azkir Shmi Avoylecha V'Ra'aticha, that means that when you come to my house, then I'll come to you. Meaning I'll come to you and I'll bless you and I will give you all the good things. That there's a quid pro quo here. That if you are coming to take care of Aliyah Regel and coming to join with Hashem, then Hashem returns the favor, blesses you, and gives you the positive side. Afhu, this is a quote from the Mishnah in Avot that's brought in the name of Hillel. Af did slightly different than the Mishnah in Avot, but basically the same idea. Afhu ra'agu golet achat shetzafal p'nei amayim. He saw a head, a skull that was floating along the water. Amarlah, he said to the skull, al dateft atfuch, because you drown someone else, they drowned you. And those that drowned you will eventually be drowned. That there is this idea of midah keneged midah, and that eventually Hashem catches up with everybody. You might be able to get away for a while, but eventually the proper punishment, the proper end comes to every individual. And he says that for whatever reason you're floating here is because you did something that was deserving of that, and whoever did this to you will eventually get paid back in kind. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the legs of an individual's inu areven bay, they are responsible to the atar dimitvai tavan movilin yate. That they are responsible to the place that he needs to get to, they bring him there. So the legs are responsible. Now the Gemara here is indicating it's on autopilot. But your legs are on autopilot and they bring you to where you need to be. This is, Rashi explains here, and we're going to see in the subsequent Gemara, this refers to the day of the death of an individual. When the person dies, they are supposed to be in a certain location in order for the Malach HaMavit to catch up with them. So what the Gemara says is that your legs are on autopilot to bring you to that specific location where the person is supposed to pass away. Tahanu tarte kushai, David kami kame de Shlomo. There were these two kushai. Kushai here is used in a loose term. Rashi says they were beautiful, and that's why it's used. And there's no reason to believe that kushai has any other meaning here or anything in particular, that they were kushim in any way. So they were serving before Shlomo, and they quote the pasuk, which is Eli Choref Achia Bnei Shisha Sofrim to Shlomo Moavu. So these two individuals who were Sofrim scribes in front of Shlomo Melech, Yom Echad Chazia LeMalach HaMavit Tavak Otziv. One day he sees that the Malach HaMavit's a little upset. Amalei Amai Atzivat, why are you so upset? Why are you despondent? Amalei Dekabom Inai Hanei Tartu Kushai Deyat Veocha. I'm supposed to be bringing back these two kushai, these two servants, these two scribes of yours, and they're sitting over here. That's my problem. I have a delivery date, and I can't take them there. So Shlomo goes, all right, Masrinu l'si'irim. Shlomo says, all right, let me protect these guys. I know that the Malach HaMavit is after them. Let me take care of them. So he hands them over to the si'irim, the shidim, the demons that work for him. He hands them over. Shadrinu l'mechuzu d'luz. And he sends them off to Luz. Luz is a city which the Gemara discusses the Malach HaMavit has no power over. So it's the city where it had the fountain of youth or whatever the reason is, the Malach HaMavit can't enter the city of Luz. So he sends these two individuals to Luz to protect them. Kibatu lebechuzah to Luz. As soon as they reach the city of Luz, shchivu, they die. The Machar Chazia Malach HaMavit, David Kabadoch, sees the Malach HaMavit the next day and he's smiling, a grin, ear to ear grin. He says, Amalei, Amai Bedichat, why are you so happy? Why are you so excited? Amalei, Batar Debal Minai, Taman, Shedredinu, you did me a favor. I had a problem. These two guys are sitting here, and I had an appointment with them in the gateway to the city of Luz, and I didn't know how to get them there. And sure enough, you sent them there. You sent them right to the gateway, and they died in the gateway on the way into the city of Luz, where they had the appointment to meet the Malach HaMavit. So Miyad Patak Shlomo, and then Shlomo began with this word, these words of wisdom. Vamar, Agloi Dabarinish, the legs of the individual in an Arivin Bay, they are responsible. Atar Dimitvaei Taman. The place that they need him, or where he's supposed to be, they end up getting there. So in the end, these two individuals would have been safe in Yerushalayim. Shlomo gets wind of it, tries to protect them and send them to Luz, but that's exactly where they had the appointment to die, and that's sure enough, that's where they end up. They say every day, which is Rabot, Machashavot, Blevish, Metzat Hashem Itakum, that man thinks that they can plan and do all these different things. In the end, it's Atzat Hashem that wins out. So we try to do all of these plans. We have all these machshavot, all of these ideas of how to protect ourselves, do these things. In the end, we end up where Hashem wants us to end up, and we get to the place that the Malach HaMavet needs us eventually when we reach Me'ev Esrim Shana. Tanya, Amru Alava Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel, Sheyat Sameach Simchat Beit HaShoeva, when he was celebrating the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, you know, tell Shmona Avukot, he was taking 8 torches, shel or, with fire on them. He'd throw one up and the other one come down and they wouldn't touch each other. He was juggling 8 torches of fire. And when he bowed down, he did what was called a kida. It's a very dangerous and difficult move, which is that he would put his 2 thumbs on the ground, and he bows, he kisses the ground, and then he jumps back up. So he basically was able to place all of his weight on his 2 thumbs. He jumped forward with all his weight on his 2 thumbs, kissed the ground, and then bounced back onto his feet. So nothing touched the ground besides his 2 thumbs and his lips that kissed the ground. And then he was back up. So all the weight was carried inside of his body. Nobody else could replicate it. Nobody else could do it. It was a very difficult move. Rashi just makes a little point here. It's cute. Rashi speaks about the kissing of the ground. Why is it that they kiss the ground? Because, you know, shake it aritzpah, the kayim mashinemar. That's to keep what it says, ki ratzu avadecha et avaneha. That you were pleased by its stones. I mean, that not only is there an enjoyment or a pleasure of living in Eretz Yisrael, but even the ground itself is holy. And therefore they kiss the ground because ki ratzu avadecha et avaneha. That they enjoyed the stones of the ground were pleasing to them. So they kiss it, and that's the minhag, an ancient minhag Yisrael, to kiss the ground. The Admat Kodesh, when Kong comes here, it's been picked up by our cousins, who seem to do it much more than we do these days. But there are stories of many of the great Sephardi Rabbonim, that when they did come here, that they did kiss the ground in Admat Kodesh. V'zoi kida, and this is what's called a kida. And the Torah talks about a kida. A kida is a bowing before Hashem that involves not the body being prostrated before Hashem, but rather just the head being on the ground or the face being in the ground. So that's a type of kida. Levi achve kida kame derabi. Levi used to perform this kida before Rabbi, ve'itlo. And he hurt himself very badly, became lame. He dislocated his leg or did something to his hips that caused him to limp afterwards. Rashi explains why they were performing for Rabbi. It's very interesting, Rashi as well. Ve'beito haya shaya nasi. They did it in his house because he was a nasi. And they gave him that honor to come before him and perform before him. But why? Because Shayad Doeg Tamid Bitzarat Yisrael. He was always worried about Klal Yisrael. And with the sickness of Bnei Yisrael, that weight and the burden of Klal Yisrael, he needed something to lighten himself up. So they used to come and perform or entertain him to take away that feeling. I mean, that he was the leader of Klal Yisrael. And it was very difficult. And the Gemara says in Nedarim, on a day that Rabbi laughed or smiled, then bad things happened to Klal Yisrael, because that means that he wasn't focused on the needs of Klal Yisrael. So here, this was a way to distract him a little bit so that he was able to...
Not too much, right.
They had to distract him, and not too much, so that he would be able to maintain the seriousness of taking care of Klal Yisrael, but take him out of any difficult or despondent feelings that he would have had. Now, the Gemara says, Vaha Garmale, is that really how Levi got hurt? Vaha Rabbi Elazar, Lolam Al Yitiach Adam Dorim Klapim Malo. Person should be careful how they speak regarding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shayadam gadol yitiach dvarim kapi malo. Somebody, yitiach means he threw out. That he just threw out some words, willy-nilly, keneged HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wasn't careful about how he spoke about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, der kavod, and in a proper manner. Ve'itlo. And then he became injured or lame, hurt his hip because of that. Umanu. And who was he referring to? He's referring to Levi. That's a story we'll get to in the Gemara in Tanit. Zumar says, ha, va, garmule. They both caused the problem. So the consideration here is, Levi did something wrong. Levi spoke inappropriately with regards to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore he was deserving of punishment. He also happened to be that Levi did this acrobatic act, this kida. It was a very difficult act that involved a lot of weight bearing on one's hips. As Rashi explains it here, it's interesting. He says that the hips were the major bearer of the weight here because you couldn't place all your weight on your thumbs. Nobody can hold themselves up on their thumbs. And you have to get back up again. So the hips were the major fulcrum in getting down to the ground and getting back up. So they carried the burden. And that's how he got injured in doing this. But it's a dangerous activity. And that's what the Gemara says here in the end is that when an individual is owed something, they have a payment from heaven. Hashem, when you're in a difficult situation, dangerous situation, it's likely that that will be the time of payment. Because you're already in danger, you're already engaged in activity that could lead to something. So Hashem won't afford you the normal protection, and then you'll be punished for things that you did before. We see this in Bamei Madlikin every week with regards to childbirth. That women in childbirth are punished for these three things. Why in childbirth? It's because today less so, but in the times of the Gemara for sure, childbirth was probably the most dangerous thing that a woman ever undertook. And there was a high percentage of women that passed away during childbirth. So therefore, we talk about Hashem taking out the payment for items that the women were not careful about during childbirth, because it was a very dangerous time. So it's a time where you need the protection of Hashem. And if you're not afforded the protection of Hashem, it's likely that something could go wrong. And so that's the idea of here, Hava HaGarmelei, is that when a person's in dangerous situations, then they're basically, their sins come up before Kadosh Baruch Hu. You know, if they type up today, the computer comes up, they situation, does he get protection, does he not get protection? They bring up the list and they see if he has any things outstanding, and then they make a decision about whether they're going to protect him in a dangerous situation. That's what happened to Levi over here. Levi hava mitayel or mitalel kamei derabi bitamnei sakine. He used to entertain before Rabbi or juggle before Rabbi with 8 knives. Here's another juggling act, but here it was done with knives instead of torches. Shmuel kamei deshavur malka betamnaya mazgei chamro. Shmuel, in front of Shavur malka, Rashi claims that he was a melech paras. Seems that he was a king of an adjacent kingdom to Yehuda in the time of Baitlid and Bayit Sheni. Josephus writes about him that they were very favorably disposed to the Jews. And he was entertaining him betamnaya with 8 mazgei chamro, cups of diluted wine. So he was juggling the cups of wine without spilling them. Abaye kamei derabo betamnayo beye. He used to do it with 8 eggs in front of his Rebbe Rabba. For amidav arba'abe. Not 8, only 4 eggs. He didn't do it with 8 eggs. Tanya amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya kshayinu smechim simchat beit ha-shueva lo reinu sheina beineinu. When we celebrated the simchat beit ha-shueva, we never slept. Ketzad, how is that? What's the schedule here? It was so exciting. There was so much to do that they didn't fall asleep. Ketzad, let's hear what the excitement was about. Shah Rishona, Tamid Shel Shachar. In the first hour, we were engaged in the Tamid Shel Shachar. Rashi says over here, Rabbi Shua ben Chananya is a Levi. Rashi over here says, Min Amisho Arim, which means one of the gatekeepers. Although the Girsa from other places, Mishorarim, which is from the singers, which would make more sense, because here he's involved with the Tamid and with the Korbanot. So he says, the first hour we were involved with Tamid Shel Shachar. Misham Letzfilah. After that, we ran off to Davin. Misham the Korban Musaf. After that, there's a Korban Musaf every day of Sukkot. So we ran off to that next. Misham Letzfilah Musafim. Right after that, we went to Tfilat Musaf. So as David points out correctly, here you have a very interesting overlap because you have both Korbanot and Tfilah at the same time. And when you talk about Tfilah B'makom Korbanot, it's not completely that way because they davened even in the time of the Korbanot. We know that the Anshei Knesset Agdolah is the ones who put the tefillah together. Anshei Knesset Agdolah are pre-Churban Abayit. So tefillah already exists. You could have argued that tefillah only existed outside of the Mikdash where there are no Korbanot. Over here, it seems to be that there was tefillah even in the time of the Chayit. There still is a general machloket amongst archaeologists as to whether there were central locations of prayer prior to the Churban Abayit. I mean, do we have Batei Knesiot that exist prior to the Korban? They have found some that were before prior to the Korban. Question is, did they function as religious areas or simply as meeting places? Literally, Beit Knesa, communal location or councils where they met there. You know already because in Masada they already had a Beit Knesset, but that was a converted Beit Knesset. They changed it into Beit Knesset, and that is post-Korban, meaning that Masada is only destroyed after the Korban Habayit. But the question is, when does that transformation take place? And is there organized davening before the Churban HaBayit? But here you have davening at least at time of the Bayit, but that is in the Mikdash itself. The question about Chutz Mikdash still exists. Misham the Beit HaMidrash. Right after that, we went to learn. Misham the Achila V'Shtiyah. After we learned, we went to eat and drink. Misham l'tfilat ha-mincha. Right after we ate and drank, we went straight to mincha. Misham l'tamid shel ben arba'im. After that, we ran off to do the tamid shel ben arba'im. Mikan ve'elech simchat beit ha-shoiva. And after that, it was simchat beit ha-shoiva all night. Until the next morning, where tamid shel shachar again. So, ini, is that really possible? Fa'amar Rabbi Yochanan shuwa shlo ishan shlosha yamim. Person takes a shuwa that he won't sleep for 3 days. Malkin oto, you give him malkot right away. Ve'ashan le'alter, and he go to sleep right away. So impossible for a person to not sleep for 3 days straight. So it becomes a shvat shav. You don't even have to attempt to keep it. It's the equivalent of saying that a piece of stone is gold. And taking a shvat like that, that's a shvat shav. You get malkot right away. And it has no bearing. The same thing here. This is the equivalent of a shvat shav because there's no way you can stay up for 3 days straight. Then you can go back, you can go to sleep because your shvat has no meaning. So obviously they couldn't have said he's doing this for 7 days straight. They have simchat beit ha-shoiva. So as it possible that they're not sleeping at all. Alochi kamar. So he says, no, this is what he meant. Lo ta'imnu ta'am sheina. We didn't taste the taste of sleep. We used to doze off on each other's shoulders. We never went to bed. We were always there. And when we got a little tired, we dozed off on each other's shoulders and then we kept going. So they were engaged, involved in the activities all through the night, all through Sukkot. The excitement and being together and the excitement of the Simchat Beit HaShoeiva kept them going, doing all the Avodat Hashem. Occasionally they got a little tired, so they dozed off on each other. All right, Chamesh Yoseh Ma'alot said there were 15 stairs that descended from the Ezrat Yisrael down into the Ezrat Nashim on the western side of the Ezrat Nashim, on the eastern gate of the Ezrat Yisrael. There were these 15 stairs that descended. Keneged, the 15 Shir HaMalot that are found in Tehillim by David HaMelech. Amar le Rav Chista lahu mi Rabbanan David kemesader agadat kamei. Chista queried of the individual who was saying over agadat in front of him. Mesader agadat means he was saying over a memorot of agadat from the Tanaim. Amar le Shmielach hani chamesh esrei malot keneged mi Amran David. Do you have any agadat that references why David HaMelech said these 15 shir malot? Like, what's the origins of them? What are they? Le'achi amar Rabbi Yochanan. David Shitin, time that David dug out the Shitin. Shitin are the pipes that go down to the Tehom. Kafa Tehoma, the Tehom, the depths floated up. Uvai the Mishtefa Alma, and they wanted to flood the world. Amar David, Chamesh Yisrei Malot. David said the 15 Shira Malot, very done, and he put them back in place. So Rabbi Chista thinks for a second and says, Yochi, Chamesh Yisrei Malot, you're adult, mi Bailei. Why is he saying the 15 songs of ascent? He should be saying the 15 songs of descent. Meaning that they have to go back down. He's trying to get the water back down. Why is he doing 15 songs of ascent if he's trying to put water back down in place and not bring it up? She says, that doesn't make sense. What you said didn't make sense. But Amalei, Hovad Gartan, Hochi Yitmar. He says, you jogged my memory. And because you jogged my memory, now Rav Chista says, I remember the Agadata, that this is the real Agadata. This is really what went on. B'sha Shekara David Shitin, the time that David excavated or dug out the Shitin, Rashi over here says that either this is according to the Man D'Amar that they weren't there Misheshet Yimei Breshit because he was digging them out when he built the Mikdash or foundations for the Mikdash, or they were there and they'd gotten filled in and he was clearing them out. He was restoring the pipes that were there beforehand. Kafat Ma, again, the Tehom floats up to the top. Ubal Mishtefa Alma, and it wants to flood the world. Amar David, Mi Iko Diyodo Ishari the Mikhtav Shem Achaspa. Does anybody know here if you're permitted to put a Shem Hashem on a shard, Vinish Dei Bitoma, and throw it in there, Umanach, and then it will sit on top of the hole or whatever it is that allows the Tehom to come up, and then it'll suppress the water. Are you allowed to do such a thing? So, Leka Dekamar Le Midei. Nobody spoke up. Nobody said a word. Amar David, called the other Meimar Ve'in Omer. Anybody who has information about this and doesn't speak up, Yechanaik Bigrono will be choked, meaning that he's going to die. This person is going to be put to death, either by me or by Hashem, it's not clear here, but they're going to be put to death if they don't speak up. So then, Nasa Achitofel Kal V'Chomer Be'atzmo. Achitofel makes a Kal V'Chomer. Now, Kal V'Chomer is not something you have in Misora, it's a logical argument that one makes on their own. So now Achitofel says, look, there's nobody going to stand up. Achitofel is David's Rebbe. It's his Rebbe, and therefore Rashi claims that David didn't speak up and say anything because he wasn't allowed to paskan halacha before his Rebbe. So since he didn't want to paskan halacha before his Rebbe, he is asking for advice about what to do, but then nobody responds. So he puts pressure on Achitofel to come up with a solution or come up with the answer because David can't do anything until Achitofel acts. So Achitofel makes the kavachomer matzmo v'malas so shalom ben ish li ishto. When it comes to making peace between a husband and a wife. Amra Torah Shmi Shenichta B'Kedusha, my holy name that is written Imachel Amayim is allowed to be erased. Lasot Shalom V'Chol Olam Kulo, over here to make peace for the whole world. Achat Kama V'Kama, certainly that is so. So Amalei Shari, he doesn't explain. It's interesting here. He responds to David and he says Mutar. He just gives the Pesach Halacha. He doesn't explain the Pesach Halacha. Here the Gemara tells you what he thought in order to give the Pesach Halacha, and then he just responds to David, Shari, Mutar, you can do it. Oh, the Achronim ask over here, why did he need this Kal v'Chomer? Why did he need a Pesach Halacha? Well, here it says that the Tome is coming up, is going to flood the world. You have Pikuach Nefesh. So once you have Pikuach Nefesh, everything overrides with regards to Pikuach Nefesh. So why did he need a Pesach Halacha that is Mutar? So there are a number of answers given. One is, maybe there wasn't Pikuach Nefesh. Mishtav Alma doesn't mean the whole world was going to be flooded. It might have meant that there were some people in danger, or there was discomfort that was going to be caused. There's going to be a lot of water, but necessarily death. That's one possibility. The other one is that maybe Hashem Hashem is different. Hashem Hashem is in a different category where you can't just do anything. It might be under the category of one of the three cardinal sins of Avodah Zarah. That is the Abizrayu of Avodah Zarah. According to some of the Rishonim, that one has to give up their life even for Abizrayu of Avodah Zarah. And therefore that would also preclude you over here from doing it. The Achronim give other reasons as well, trying to explain why David needed a Pesach Halacha, despite what seemingly here is Pikuach Nefesh. So Katav Shem Achaspo, he wrote the Shem Hashem on a shard, Veshadi L'Tahoma. He threw it down into the Tahom, V'Nochit Tahoma Shitzar Alfei Garmideh. So now the reason that he used the shard, as Rashi says, is because the shard doesn't float, and therefore it's going to sink, and it's going to sink and plug the hole down below. So in order to do that, he put it on a shard, he put it in there, and then it causes the home to back up and to be Shitzar Alfei Garmideh, 16,000 Garmideh Amot below ground. Kihazi de Nachit Tuva, when he saw it went down too far, Amar Kama de Midlei Tvei Mirtav Alma. The higher that the base of the Tahom is, basically the higher the water table is, then the more moist the ground is, the better it is for the crops and for the growth of the vegetation. Samar Chameshesrei Malot. He said then the Chameshesrei Malot, V'aske Chamesar Alfei Garmideh. He raised it 15,000 Garmideh or Amot, V'ukmei B'Alfei Garmideh. He put it at 1,000 Garmideh. Amarula Shmamina Sumcho D'Ara Alfei Garmideh. Says that the crust, the top layer of the earth is 1,000 Garmideh deep, because that's where the Tahom is. It's floating on top of the Tahom. And if the Tahom is 1,000 Garmideh below, that means that the depth of the top layer of the earth is 1,000 Garmideh. Where it says, V'achazinan dekarinan porta benafke mayo. Says, I don't understand. We dig into the ground, a lot less than 1,000 Garmideh, and all of a sudden we have a spring that's shooting out, water that's spreading out. That means that the Tahom or the water table is much higher. So Amar Mishar Shahu Mesuma de Prat. That is from the Sulamot, the ladders of Prat. Now, as Rashi explains over here, by the way, it's a brilliant concept in physics that they understood over here. Rashi says that water that comes from the mountain springs, if you have water that's sourced out of a mountain spring, as long as the water starts at a high level, then it can move along, even uphill, as long as the location where it ends up is lower than when it started. So even if you start with water and it goes downhill, it can climb the next hill as long as where it started, it was higher than the point that is next. And it can make its way through and it can be. That's how the aqueduct systems, the Roman aqueduct systems were built, which is using this principle of physics that you started from a higher point, you could get to the lower point. And that's why Ein Eitam was 11 amot higher than the Mikdash, because the Ein Eitam brought the water to the Mikdash. It had to be higher, but it had to traverse mountains along the way. So Rashi claims that the Sulama de Prat, Prat is the highest water body, the sources of the Prat are the highest water body, and Sulama de Prat is because those water sources in the Prat are so high, it has the ability to go uphill, the water. So when we're hitting the water, we're hitting the water when it's going up the mountains, meaning that it has a higher level. Because of that, the water starts out much higher, it's able to go higher on the mountains, and that's the water that we're bumping into. That water we're bumping into is from this source that starts out or has a source that's much higher, and therefore the water is able to maintain a certain height above the normal Tahom. Va'amdu Kohanim Bishar Elyon Shared. So we said over there that they start at the upper gate, meaning the gate coming out of the Ezrat Yisrael and descending into the Ezrat Hashem, and there they blew the shofar. And then it says they descended the stairs, and on the 10th stair, they blew the shofar. So the question, of course, is the 10th stair, which is the 10th stair? Which way you have to, depends, right? Is the 10th stair standing from the top, so that means it's 5th from the bottom? Or is it the 5th stair from the top, which is 10 from the bottom? That's what Gemara asked by Rabbi Yirmiyah. V'male asirit d'achit chamisha, that he goes to the 10th stair, which means he descends 5. V'kaya asara, and therefore he's on the 10th stair. Odilma d'nochit asara, he descends 10 stairs. V'kaya chamisha, and then he's standing on the 5th stair. The Gemara says, teiku, we don't know. Good question. Tana Rabbanan, mimashma shenemar, the pasuk says, upneim kedma, that they face the east. In Yehudea shachorem el-Heichal Hashem, don't we know that their backs were to the Heichal Hashem? If the Heichal Hashem is in the west, then certainly if they're facing east, by definition, their back is towards the west. So why does the Pasuk tell us that they were facing east and their backs were towards the Heichal Hashem? So the Gemara says from the Pasuk in Yechezkel that describes this, Ela matam adomar, what does this teach us? To matam adomar chem el-Heichal Hashem, why does it give us this information that their backs were towards Hashem? That means it must have been more than simply their backs were towards Hashem. Elamei, Shupurim atzman, they used to reveal themselves, they unveiled their backside. Umatrizin klape mato, and then they were defecating. Papi mata is lashon sagi nahor, that there was against the Kodesh Baruch Hu, they used to defecate towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it's not only that they simply faced the east, but they were also doing denigrating things towards the west or towards a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that's why it says, Pneim kedma, ve'achorehem al-Heichal Hashem. The addition of achorehem al-Heichal Hashem tells you it's not simply their backs, but they did something that was terrible. Anu l'ka, u'l'ka inenu. At the end of the Mishnah, we had the suggestion of Rabbi Yehuda that they duplicated. That not only did they say, anu l'ka inenu, we have our eyes towards Hashem, but rather they said, we are to Hashem, and to Hashem are our eyes. So the Gemara says, is that permissible? Ini, can you really do this? So Amar Rabbi Zera, kol amer shma shma, kilo amer modim modim. Anybody who repeats shma, is as if he said modim twice. We know that someone who says modim twice, the Mishnah Brachot says mishatkin otel, we stop him. Because as if he's bowing down to two deities. If he says modim modim, then it implies that there's not a singular God, but there are multiple gods and he's bowing down multiple times. So because of that, we don't allow for repetition. So don't you have that problem here? If you say l'ka, l'ka, then you have a repetition of that item. Elachi amrei, heima mishtachavim keidma. They bow down to the east. Ve'anau l'ka mishtachavim. We bow down to God. Ve'enenu l'ka miyachalot. And our eyes look expectingly towards a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Our eyes look in anticipation of you, a Kodesh Baruch Hu, That we look towards a Kodesh Baruch Hu for our salvation. So by creating two different sentences or verbs around the Shem Hashem, then you're okay. Because then the ka and the ka are, one is about the bowing down and one is about the looking. And once you've done that, you've separated it out and it doesn't make like you're bowing down or saying something to two gods. It's about the same God. It's about a different activity. So therefore it would be okay. So it altered the statement in the Mishnah a little bit to conform to the fact that you can't to repeat. Right? You see here, Veinenu l'ka, their eyes to Hashem is Yud-Kei. Yud-Kei, or the Yud and the Hey, equal 15. 15 are the stairs that we talk about. That's the Shir HaMalot. The Gemara in other places tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with an Ot Hey, and created Olam Haba with the Ot Yud. So Yud and Hey are the creation of the world, Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. And so then when we talk about the Shem Ka over here, that's a reference to Hashem being the master of the world, Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. And the centrality of the Avodat HaMikdash to maintenance of the world and the upkeep of the world. And that's why the 15 Shir HaMalot, as well as the 15 stairs that reference the Shem Yud-Kei over here, are mentioned in the context of the 15 stairs of the Mikdash. Right. Now, next Mishnah. Ein po chatim yesrim v'achat tkiyot v'mikdash. One cannot blow less than 21 tkiyot on a given day in the Mikdash. V'emosifim al arbiim u'shmoneh b'chol yom. And you don't add on more than 48. I mean, the maximum amount in the Mikdash is 48. The minimum amount is 21. We saw this already in Arachin. We also saw it in Bamei Madlikin, in the Gemara in Shabbat. Discussing the blowing of the shofarot, we're going to see in a second on Erev Shabbat. So, B'chol Yom, how does this work? Every day, Yushem Esrim V'achat, there were 21. Kiyot B'Mikdash. Shalosh L'Ptichat She'arim. 3, when they open up the gates in the morning. Teisha L'Tamid Shel Shachar. 9 that accompanied the Tamid Shel Shachar. So Rashi explains they broke the shir up. There was a song that went together, the Levim song that went together with the Tamid Shel Shachar. They broke it into 3 parts. And in each part, they blew the tkiyah. V'teisha l'tamid shel ben arba'im. And then 9 that accompanied the Tamid Shel ben arba'im, similarly. U'musafim, if you added on a musaf, hayu musafim l'teisha. There were another 9 for the musaf, as Rashi says, the shir shel musaf. Which is very interesting that they had a different shir for Tamid Shachar than the Musaf. That might relate to what we know, the Gemara here is going to discuss at the end of Sukkah the shir for each specific day in the Mikdash. Of the 7 days a week, there was a shir that was sung by the Leviim. We today say on a given day, there's the shir shel yom, and then the Gro who brings down the shirot of the days that are particular special days, like Shchodesh and other days, which the Gemara brings in numerous places here and in the Mishnah in Tamid, at the end of Tamid. So today, here in most places in Eretz Yisrael, they follow the Minhag HaGro. What's interesting here is that Rashi indicates that there were two different songs. One song that went to Tamid Shel Shachar, one song that went together with the Musaf. So in that context, it might make sense that there was a song that went with the Tamid Shel Shachar that was the regular weekday. Whatever the day of the week was, that was the song that went there. But Shabbat, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whatever it was. The Shir Shel Musaf was related to the specific day. And that might be why there are two shirim over here. Possible, it's not mukhrach, but it's interesting then, that maybe we should say one shir, like Nusach Sfarad, after Shmon Esrei of Shacharit, and then say the other shir after Musaf, which is the shir that was associated with that particular day. So that might be an interesting outcome of what Rashi suggests over here. Oh, why we don't do that? The Gra says that it replaces the Shir Shel Yom.
And those that don't hold Gra
don't say the other thing altogether. Yeah, so nobody does what I just suggested. It's a suggestion. Be'er Shabbat, if it turns out to be Erev Shabbat as well, Hayu Mosifim Shesh. They have another six kiyot. Shlosh Lavdil at Ami Melecha. Three, to tell the people time to close up shop. And three, Shlosh Lavdil Ben Kodesh Lechol. And three, to divide Ben Kodesh Lechol, the equivalent of the siren here in Eretz Yisrael today, which tells you it's time for Shabbos. So that's what they had in the Mikdash. They blew six times, three of them early on, and then three of them at the end. Three of them literally when Shabbat starts, three of them earlier on. First one was for the people in the fields, second one is for the stores, and the third one is for the houses. I mean, the different time periods of how much time people needed to get back, so they stopped their melocha based on the shofarot. All right, so then we discussed back in the Gemara and Shabbat, happens to be a machloket Rashi, and some of the other Rishonim, as to what that means, that they had six tkiot on Erev Shabbat. Here, the Gemara is going to, from the Gemara here, Tosfot says Rashi's position is upheld, which is Rashi says that the three blows were tkiya, shua, tkiya. That's what it meant. Others say that three meant that they blew tkiya, shua, tkiya each time along the three. So that would end up really nine that were blown. But Rashi says that it was a tkiya, shua, tkiya. And the Gemara, the Mishnah here supports Rashi's interpretation of understanding here that every unit of three, and Rashi says it explicitly, that every unit of three here that we mention is a tkiya, shua, tkiya. When we say that there are nine tkiyot on the Qurban, that means it's three sets of three. That every break in the shir, they used to go a tkiya, shua, tkiya, and those are the three that count. All right, we'll see in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to ask the question about it, but that he refused over there. What we discussed over there is the Indian of Kabbalat Shabbat. With regards to blowing of the shofar, they says here that they blew the last time in order to Abdil Ben Kodesh Lechol. What does that mean? Is that the last activity that they did before they started? And that relates to lighting candles. One lights candles on Erev Shabbat, or when the women light candles on Erev Shabbat, what does that activity signal? Is that the last melocha that you do prior to Shabbat? Or is the lighting of the candles the acceptance of Shabbat that presents you with a problem afterwards? So that's the question amongst the Rishonim, that when one lights the candles, first of all, can you make the bracha beforehand? And number two is, once you've lit the candles, can you blow out the match? Afterwards, have you already accepted Shabbat? Is the lighting of the candles the, per se, acceptance of Shabbat? Or is the lighting of the candles the last activity that you're doing before you accept the Shabbat? Because that's why you can do this activity. Obviously, it has implications in terms of bracha beforehand and blowing out the match afterwards. We discussed that back in Bamei Madikim. Erev Shabbat, Shavitoch HaChag. Now, this is where you get to the 48, when you have Erev Shabbat that falls out in the middle of Sukkot, meaning Chol HaMoed Sukkot. That's when you get to the 48. Shlosh the Ptichat Sharim, the normal three for opening up the gates in the morning. Shlosh the Shara Elyon. The three, four, this is for the Simchat Beit HaShoeiva that we discussed in the previous Mishnah. The three that they blew up by the Shara Elyon. Shlosh the Shara Tachton. The three they blew when they got down to the floor of the Azara and they continued until they left. Shalosh the Miloy Amayim. Three for when they brought the water back after they drew it. V'shalosh agav mizbech, and three they blew when they did the nisuch hamayim al mizbech. Rashi actually says that the three tkiot, the last three tkiot, are associated with the skifat ha'arava. Out of those that were associated with nisuch hamayim, those last three that are special for skifat ha'arava, saviv da mizbech. It's interesting that Rashi, all throughout the Masechta, when he talks about the arava, always talks about the arava being hakef, that they used to walk around with the arava. He never mentions anything about skifat ha'arava. This is the only time that Rashi, in his Peirush, as regards to what they did with the Aravot, says that it was his kifah that they stood him up by the Mizbeach, and they did not just walk around Saviv la Mizbeach. The one that's obviously missing here is the one that's down on the 10th stair that is not enumerated here in the Mishnah. The Gemara will ask that question. Teisha the Tamid Shel Shachar, 9 for the normal Tamid Shel Shachar. Teisha the Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim, 9 for the normal Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim. V'teisha the Musafim, and Teisha for the Musafim, because it's called a Moed, so there is Musaf. And then Shlosh, Lavdilat Amin Amalacha, 3 for the people desisting from Malacha, and 3, Shalosh, Lavdil Ben Kodesh Tuchol. So if you do that, you get 48. You have 3 Korbanot with 9, that gets you to 27 for the Korbanot Ayom. You have 12 that are associated with the Niso Chamayim, and that gets you up to 39. Then you have the normal 3 that go with the opening of the gates in the morning. So that gets you up to 42. And the 6 that are related to Erev Shabbat. So that gets you to the 48 yod that you can have. So that's the maximum. 48 is the maximum that happens on Chol HaMoed Erev Shabbat. And the minimum is a normal day in the Mikdash is 21. So Matnita and the local Rabbi Yehuda. Our mission is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, HaPuchet Lo Yivchot Misheva. There's no less than 7. And whoever adds on should be no more than 16. It's clear here what he did. You took the numbers and divided them by 3. It's 21 divided by 3 is 7, and 48 divided by 3 is 16. So Maika Miflige, what's the argument here? Rav Yehuda Savar Tkiyah Shua Tkiyah Chati. He thinks that Tkiyah Shua Tkiyah is counted as one item. Rabbanan Savri Tkiyah Luchud Uchra Luchud. Each one of them is counted independently. In the end, they blow the same number of blowings. It's just a question of what they mean. Is Tkiyah Shua Tkiyah 3, or is it 1? So Rav Yehuda believes it's 1. And the Chachamim believe it's 3. So Rabbi Yehuda's count is 7 and 16, whereas the Chachamim's count is 21 and 48. My time at the Rabbi Yehuda. What's Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning? Amar Kra Utkatim Trua. The verb used with reference to Trua is Tkia. You will blow a Trua, but it doesn't say Utruatem Trua, or Hariotem Trua. It says Utkatim Trua. So why does it use the verb Tkia associated with Trua? That must be that they are the same. They're one and the same. Rabbanan, how will the pshuta lefana ulachre hudata? Can we say, no, we use that to teach us that you have to have a tkiah before the trua. Utkatim is not referring to the trua. Utkatim is a tkiah that you do before the trua. So there's a tkiah before the trua, and then we have another pasuk that says, uba trua titkau, that you'll blow with the trua, and that tells you there's a tkiah after the trua. So you have a tkiah before, a tkiah afterwards. So Rabbanan, maitamayu, what's the reasoning behind the Rabbanan's position? Because the pasuk says when Moshe wants to gather the people together, they blow a tkiah and not a truah. The fact that the pasuk differentiates and says tkiah and no truah tells you that they're separate because he saw that tkiah truah achati, that they're one unit. Amar Rachmana pago de mitzvah avid u pago lo avid. They're telling you to do half a mitzvah. I mean, if a tkiah and truah always come as a package, then why is the Torah telling you just blow a tkiah, don't blow a truah? So review the how the simono be'almahu. That's not for a mitzvah. That's just a way to tell the people it's time to come. It was a signal, not a mitzvah. Signal you could do with a tkiah separated from a trua. When it comes to a mitzvah, tzivui, there it has to be their one unit. Rabbanan simanuhu, v'rachmanu shavya mitzvah. You're right, it is a signal. But the Torah commands you to do it in this way. The fact that the Torah commands you to do something that you would have done anyway because you need a signal, that doesn't mean it's not a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. Kamana azahad amar Rav Kahana. Who is this like this statement of Rav Kahana? En ben tkiyah l'truah v'lo klum. There's no pause between the tkiyot and the truot. When you blow the tkiyah, truah, tkiyah, you blow them in a single breath. You do not interrupt. Or you only take a breath in between them. You blow them and just want a quick breath in between them. Man ke Rav Yehuda. That is like Rav Yehuda. Pshita. Who else do you think it is? I mean, the fact that you're blowing them in succession indicates that they are a single unit. And Rashi says even if you take a breath in between, they're considered to be a single unit. Why? We would think maybe it's even like the Rabbanan. Fuke mit the Rabbi Yochanan. To exclude the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Damar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan believes, Shama tesha tkiot v'tesha shot bayom. If you hear the 9 blows that you need to hear midoraita on Rosh Hashanah stretched across the whole day, yatsa. You're good. They don't have to be all together. They can be spread across the whole day. So you would have thought that there are actually 3 positions. There's one position, it's a position of Rabbi Yehuda, which is you blow them in succession, either with a short breath in between or straight through. The Rabbanan who believe that you can take a short break in between them. How short a break? The amount of time it would take you to finish the series. The amount of time it would take you to finish 9, that is the principle. Like when you're davening, when you want to know how much of an interruption you can have without calling it an interruption, it's the amount of time it would take you to complete whatever you're involved in. So the amount of time it would take you to finish Shema, if you interrupt that amount of time in there, then that's considered to be a hefsek in your Shema. So it's over here. The amount of time it would take you to complete the 9 blows, that's the amount of time you can interrupt without it being an interruption. So that would be the position of the Chachamim. And then you have the position of Rabbi Yochanan, which is, you can go all day. You can get as wide an interruption as you want. So we would have thought that there is that type of hierarchy, and therefore the Chachamim, Rav Kahana, could even be speaking about the Chachamim. Where it says, right, that's a great explanation. And then maybe that is the explanation. Maybe even Rav Kahana is according to Chachamim, where it says, Imkein, my velo klum. Lo klum is an indication of nothing, or sparingly. There's almost no gap in between them, which would only be true according to Rabbi Yehuda. Even the Chachamim, who disagree with Rabbi Yochanan, still think you can have a small gap there. They think you can go as long as the amount of time it would take you to blow all of the 9 blows that you're required, that gap would be okay. So the fact, the lo klum means a very short division between them, or no division between them. That's only true according to Rabbi Yehuda, who thinks that they have to be blown in succession. Okay, we'll stop over here.